From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette, and this is Idaho Matters. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is raising the alarm about the potential risk for new cases of Mpox, previously known as monkeypox, to emerge this summer. Joining us today to discuss this in greater detail is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System. And remember, if you have a public health question for Dr. Pate, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Dr. Pate, good to have you on the program.
Thank you, Gemma.
Okay, so first off, Dr. Pate, can you remind us what Mpox is? As I mentioned, it used to be known as monkeypox, but they have changed the name.
That's right. So monkeypox or Mpox is a virus that we've known about for decades. It has caused outbreaks in Africa, and it's been on some of our lists as something to be concerned about, that it could spread beyond the continent of Africa, and we needed to be prepared for it. And so monkeypox is named so because it was first detected in some monkeys, and it's called pox because it is in the family of viruses that cause pox-like lesions, which are like pustules or big nodules and pustules over the body. Like smallpox and some other kinds of things. In Africa, these outbreaks have generally been able to be contained, but they have been deadly and have had much higher rates of mortality that could be any number of different factors, but then what we're seeing with the monkeypox or Mpox outbreak that occurred worldwide last year. And so what we saw was cases spread to over 100 countries outside of Africa. So that shows you how quickly diseases that seem to be geographically isolated can spread through the world. And that's why we keep emphasizing that even these various diseases that we think are just a problem in Africa or some other underdeveloped country doesn't mean we shouldn't pay attention to it, research it, and be prepared. Last year in the United States, cases peaked in about August of last year. We've had over 30,000 cases in the United States. However, this has been much different than what we see in Africa outbreaks. First of all, as I already mentioned, we see a lower mortality rate. So relatively few people died, thank God, in this outbreak, whereas we tend to see much higher mortality rates in Africa. The other thing that just boggles my mind is that in Africa, this is clearly just a disease spread by close proximity, being having physical contact with other people or their bed clothing, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Here in the United States and across the world, what we saw is an outbreak of this virus mostly among men who have sex with men. And so very perplexing because we don't usually see viruses change their transmission methodology. It is still transmitted by close contact, but we've never seen it behave this way before. So we started offering a vaccine that was in our stockpiles. It's not specific for Mpox because it was being stored as preparation in case smallpox was ever weaponized and used as a bioweapon again. Smallpox is the only virus that we've actually eradicated from the world, but we feared that it could be used in a weapon. So we had a couple of different kinds of vaccines, and there was reason to believe that one of those vaccines at least would probably have some protection for mpox. So we started trying to roll those vaccines out last year. And in fact, data suggested it was going to be very effective. But what is alarming now and what led to the CDC's warning is that in last month, actually April to May of this year, there was an outbreak of 12 cases in Chicago, and 9 of the 12 had been fully vaccinated. So this is concerning as to what's going on here. The good news is that it did, the having been vaccinated did seem to protect these folks from getting severe disease, much like what we see with COVID. But we are surprised that we're seeing cases in vaccinated people. So this is something to be concerned about. And we're particularly worried about various festivals and gatherings that are held internationally, particularly over these summer months, that it might fuel more cases.
So, Dr. Pate, I know you mentioned that here in the United States and other parts of the world that what we've been seeing mostly with transmission is in men who have sex with other men. I bring this up because I think what happened last year is that there was kind of a dismissive attitude in a way about mpox if you did not fit into that particular category. However, as you mentioned, in Africa, it is close contact, and or even on someone's, you know, blanket or clothes, something like that. I mean, that could still happen in other parts of the world. So how concerned should someone who doesn't fall into that category of men having sex with men be concerned about this?
Well, it's a great question. And, you know, part of my discomfort is I don't understand why the transmission properties changed. Now, with that said, although those cases were predominantly in men having sex with men, there were others. There were some children that were affected, and probably because they had close contact, maybe as a relative or other close contact to some of the people infected. And we have seen it in some heterosexual women. And of course, we have to always understand that there are some men who have sex with men who are also bisexual. So women are not, don't get a get out of jail free card here. With that said, we just don't see that many cases with this outbreak. So I don't think it's cause for alarm. But what I do think is it's cause, another cause among many, for our government to start really taking these various illnesses more seriously. We've got to invest in research to understand these viruses. It's, you know, mpox today, but it can be something different in a couple years. So we need to do research. We also need to understand about what's going on with this virus. Why did it change its transmission characteristics? Could other viruses do this? And why did we get such good initial information on vaccine effectiveness, but now we're seeing cases in fully vaccinated individuals at only a year? So we have lots to do. And you brought up a great point, Gemma. One thing that's very concerning to those of us in medicine and public health is that as a society, we tend to not be concerned about diseases that are primarily transmitted in homosexual groups or other other groups of people, because we stigmatize them, and then we make it hard for them to get care because they are well aware of the stigma and all. And it's not in any of our best interests that these people not get treatment, because it can spill over and affect other people. And so even if we do it for our own selfish interests, but there's tremendous suffering in these populations, and that itself should be enough reason that we need to invest more and take those much more seriously.
So let's turn now to some news in regards to COVID, because Dr. Pate, there's some new evidence out about how it could harm the brain and the heart. And I know you recently wrote about this. So what is this new evidence and what are we learning?
Well, we are learning a lot more. And, you know, Gemma, this gets back to conversations you and I have had for the past 3 years that cautioning listeners, don't focus only on mortality and the risk of whether you're going to die from this virus or not. We also need to be concerned about morbidity, that is, long-term health consequences. And what we've seen with COVID is that certainly it's worrisome how many people die with acute COVID. But what's also concerning is the number of people we see with long COVID or other manifestations. For example, a study came out last year and showed that in the year following COVID infection, you were more likely to have a heart attack, a stroke, certain arrhythmias, blood clots. There's a lot of things that can happen. And unfortunately, most of the time, those aren't recognized as being due to COVID. So one question that comes up is, why do we see problems from COVID 6-12 months out from COVID? So two interesting studies recently. The first one with respect to the heart, because if we look at excess mortality, which helps us figure out what's going on when we know not all of the cases are getting captured. If we look at excess mortality, which is how many more people died than what was expected based on previous population trends. And what we see is that while early in the pandemic, those excess deaths were in the elderly, and that we realized because COVID was disproportionately affecting them in the acute phase. But what we're seeing now is most of those excess deaths, at least relative mortality, is occurring in the under 50, in adults who are at the prime of their life. And what we see is people all of a sudden having heart attacks or strokes or other problems. This one study identified that 6 months after COVID, they could detect what's called endothelial dysfunction. Endothelium is the lining of our blood vessels. And what happens is if we exercise, we should increase the blood flow to our body, but also the blood flow to our heart because it's consuming more oxygen with exercise. And so if you or I exercise, what we would expect to see is a doubling or even up to 2.5 times more blood flow through the arteries that actually deliver blood to the heart muscle. What they found in these individuals following COVID who had recovered and otherwise seemed to be fine, but they had diminished reserve. That is, the blood flow to the heart muscle increased by less than twice. And this is thought to be due to this endothelial dysfunction because we know the virus can target those cells and these blood vessels become stiffened and they don't adjust to increase the blood flow when we need. And so it is not proof of what's happening, but is concerned that that may be why some people are having heart attacks. And then just quickly, and we can talk later, but from the brain standpoint, we've seen a lot of neurologic symptoms after COVID. This study was very concerning in that we knew back in 2021 with Delta that the virus was infecting lung cells and causing them to fuse and form patches of connected cells, which gives the virus an advantage and probably explains why we saw so many people on ventilators. We didn't think that could happen in the brain, but this study just showed that it can. And by fusing the brain cells, what the investigators showed is that it could be decreasing the neurologic signals by more than 10%. And that's of significant concern.
And So what should people be doing then, Dr. Pate? I mean, if they're getting COVID because, you know, people are still getting it, I mean, do things like extra rest, and I know that might sound silly, but I mean, maybe people aren't giving themselves enough time to recover anymore.
That is a great point, Gemma, and we believe that that may be playing a role. I think that the takeaways, there's still much that we don't know, and we're going to learn with time, but these are more reasons to be concerned about getting infected. That doesn't mean shut yourself up in a bubble, go on lockdown. That's not what I'm talking about. But what I'm talking about is don't be complacent about it. Take reasonable precautions where you can and decrease your chances. If you have not been infected yet, try to avoid or delay as long as you can getting infected. If you have been infected, try to delay getting reinfected if you can. And like you said, make sure your body gets plenty of rest. Realize that once you recover from COVID and you may be feeling a lot better, these changes may still be going on in your body. And in fact, I just talked to someone yesterday who's now got some very distressing neurologic symptoms from having been infected with COVID. And so I'm trying to get her help. What people need to realize is after you think you've recovered, if you're having problems, if it seems like it's difficulty concentrating, if you are seeing abnormal movements, I'm helping another person who's got very abnormal movements of their body that's uncontrolled and likely due to COVID. If you're seeing anything out of the ordinary, or if you're getting chest pains, or it seems like you get short of breath, don't dismiss it. Check with your doctor, and we need to make sure you get evaluated.
Well, as always, Dr. Pate, we so appreciate your time and coming in and talking to all of us about these public health concerns. So appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
And we will, of course, have Dr. Pate back with us next week. So if you have public health questions for him, get them in, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.